Herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Folge von Verstehe Ayurveda, verstehe dich mit mir, Ursula Feuerherd. Meinen heutigen Gast, John Kirk von der Shadow Work Association, habe ich zu Beginn des Jahres als Teilnehmerin eines seiner Shadow Work Seminare in England kennengelernt, das er mit seiner Frau Nicola gemeinsam geleitet hat. Und bevor ich dir John jetzt näher vorstelle, möchte ich dir erzählen, warum es diesmal um Shadow Work geht und was ich dabei erlebt habe. Ich habe das Seminar gemeinsam mit meinem Partner besucht. Das Setting war sehr speziell in einem Retreat-Haus im Norden Englands. Das hat eher einem kleinen Schloss geglichen und stand mitten im Grünen. Wir waren eine kleine Gruppe, 10 großartige Menschen und alle mutig genug, sich ihren eigenen Schatten zu stellen. Und obwohl ich mit dem Seminar zu einem ganz eigenen Thema von mir arbeiten durfte, war da was anderes, das hat mich noch mehr berührt. Vielleicht kennst du Momente, in denen du einen nahen Menschen plötzlich mit anderen Augen anschaust. Ich habe den Ursprung eines Musters bei meinem Partner gesehen und durch Zusehen seines Prozesses miterlebt. Das hätte er mir in Worten nie erklären können. John beschreibt im Gespräch, warum dieses gemeinsame Erleben so kraftvoll ist.
I've had lots of people, lots of spouses drag their partner into a group. And I want you to be there because I want you to change. And that's very difficult. But if two are agreeing, in, as was your experience, and want to be there, then I think it's incredibly supportive to see the roots of one's partner's behaviors that one might find very difficult and want to change. And then compassion just expands. It's like, oh, now I understand.
Und John erklärt so wunderbar, dass wir mit dieser ganzen Klaviatur an Tönen zur Welt kommen. Und in unserer Kindheit lernen wir oft, dass manches davon unerwünscht ist. Von unseren Eltern, von der Umgebung, von der Schule, von der Gesellschaft. Und so beginnen wir diese Töne, diese Seiten in uns zu vermeiden und zu verstecken. Wir stellen sie also in den Schatten.
Little story, 5-year-old boy or girl does a drawing of some kind and they're very proud of it and it's those big, thick, waxy crayon type things and there's a sort of house and a tree and either if the parents just says, oh, that's great, but they're so busy doing their important adult things, the child goes, well, gosh, I'm not doing it right or it's not good enough. Or the parent just says, from a sincere, apparently sincere, wanting their child to be better, well, it's lovely what you've done, but it'd be better if the chimney was greater. And a little puff of smoke, then it would really be good. And the child goes, oh, okay, all right, so I'm not quite good enough. And that's only got to happen a few times. And you develop this pattern, which we hear a lot in people, with underneath, I don't believe I'm good enough.
In dieser Folge sprechen John und ich darüber, wie aus diesen frühen Botschaften unsichtbare Muster werden, an denen wir uns als Erwachsene halten, oft ohne es zu merken. Und ein Gedanke noch, der mich an dieser Arbeit besonders berührt. Shadow Work geschieht nicht nur im Kopf. Und genau da schließt sich auch hier der Kreis zum Ayurveda und dieses Potenzial, sich selber besser zu verstehen. John Kirk ist Pionier der Shadow Work in Großbritannien und Europa. Und gemeinsam mit seiner Frau Nicola hat er über 30 Jahre lang ein lebendiges Netzwerk von Shadow Work Facilitators und Trainer aufgebaut, die heute das Wissen weitergeben. In Ländern wie Deutschland, Frankreich, Belgien, Schweiz, Schweden, der Türkei, Russland und Kasachstan. John und Nicola leben westlich von Oxford, wo sie bis heute eine neue Generation von Facilitators ausbilden und begleiten. John arbeitet außerdem als Coach für Einzelpersonen, Paare und Organisationen und ist Leader und Leader Trainer für das Mankind Project International. Du hast es schon gehört, dieses Gespräch ist auf Englisch und es lohnt sich, bis zum Schluss dran zu bleiben. Du erfährst dabei, wie wir unsere eigenen Schatten überhaupt erkennen können, wie aus Wunden mit der Zeit Stärken werden und was es bedeutet, das Gold in der Wunde zu finden, warum echte Veränderung an der Wurzel beginnt, wie Shadow Work mit Trauma arbeitet und warum Shadow Work heute fast ein Modewort geworden ist, die Schattenarbeit, und was die ursprüngliche Arbeit davon unterscheidet. Ich wünsche dir ganz viel Freude beim Hören und viel Inspiration. Welcome, John, to my podcast. I'm very happy and honored to have you.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. I'm looking forward to it.
John, I've been attending a shadow work workshop with yourself and your wife, Nicola. You led the workshop. And it was an amazing experience for me. It was a deep experience. You've done this for 34 years now. And not only occasionally, you've really been a pioneer of this work. You're kind of the source for shadow work in Europe. And before we dive into the topic, please let us know, what is shadow work actually?
It's hard to describe. And what's going on in my mind is that now so many people have the word shadow work in their mind, and it's different to what I think of as shadow work. And because, as we've acknowledged when we spoke before, it's become a buzzword now. A lot of people are using it, and the term, you know, has been around. It was Carl Jung, particularly, who brought the term shadow. The term shadow. I don't know who first used the word shadow work. I don't know. I'll get to what you're asking in a moment. What I touched into and what I experienced was highly experiential, full body experience, and it impacted me very deeply, which is not the same as watching a video or reading a book or writing a journal about and finding out, oh, maybe I've got some shadows. And shadows are those parts of ourselves that we hide, suppress, and deny consciously or unconsciously. And I know for very good reasons. And it's not all the bad, dark things. It's sometimes a lot of the finest, our best qualities and competencies. But for whatever reason, they go into shadow. I.e., they're not available on a day-to-day basis, except they come out under pressure. And they hurt people often. And we regret that. So the shadow work that I know, and that what I've been experiencing and bringing to people and wanting more and more people to have, is a highly experiential process of looking at issues in one's life, looking at what's working and what's not working, and having it portrayed in a three-dimensional arena with role play, so you can see your scenario portrayed in front of you and you interact with it. And can choose to make change, whether if you choose to or not. And that change mostly, with the most impact, goes to very visceral, experiential things in one's body. So that deeply changes the programming that built up earlier that stopped one being able to do certain things. I could elaborate, and I probably will as we go forward. I don't know if that helps. But that is very different to talking to somebody like we are now on the screen, or reading a book or writing a journal or discussing it, even in a psychotherapists use the term shadow and have for years, of course. I'll just say one more thing, that I've experienced lots of people who've been in therapy, done a lot of quote personal exploration. They come to shadow work and they're blown away, because it's so penetrative, it's so incisive. It's not that all those other things aren't important, they are. This is just very different. The shadow work we're doing is like laser beam right in on key core issues and brings change inside oneself. So.
Yeah, I can confirm.
Does that relate to your experience?
Yeah, I can confirm that. What comes to my mind is the experience I had with my partner's, my spouse process, where I was also like watching, observing, and he couldn't have told me in words what I was, you know, sensing, feeling, experiencing there. And it gave me so much more also compassion with his states of mind.
Yes. Yeah.
So maybe I should have brought an example of myself. But that came to mind.
Well, no, it's fine. I mean, I could bring up lots of examples. I mean, I love seeing couples come to our group sessions because it requires a certain bravery and courage and an agreement. I've had lots of people, lots of spouses drag their partner into a group and I want you to be there because I want you to change. And that's very difficult. And quite often that partner will leave because they just don't want to be there. But if two are agreeing, in as was your experience, and want to be there, then I think it's incredibly supportive to see the roots of one's partner's behaviors that one might find very difficult and want to change. And then compassion just expands. It's like, oh, now I understand. So I think that's very valuable. And sometimes, well, anyways, I could go on so much.
Can you tell how this happens that you said we don't only put the dark stuff in the shadow, but also yes. like qualities and really good things? How does that happen?
Okay, well, in simple terms, my view is that a baby is born with the potential of full expression. All colors of the rainbow, all notes of the octave, what we call 360 degree, you know, and little children are like that. It's all happening very quickly and fast, and because they have no filters, they have no limiting, they just are being themselves and they cannot help it. And what happens is the family that around them as they grow starts to impact. And between naught and, well, I used to say 21, as their formative years. So the formative years of childhood, of babyhood, childhood, adolescence, and young adulthood are what I consider the formative years. And in those, if at any point in there, for whatever reason, a child or a person growing in that time period experiences this, that behavior is not acceptable. We have the potential to express all of those colors or notes in the octave, it's natural to us. And each individual has its own subtle nuance of that. But if family, close extended family, society, whatever, educational system, political system, cultural system says that's not okay, unconsciously, those things will go into shadow.
Would you have an example for that?
Yes. Okay. So, well, obvious things are when, you know, children are young and they want to touch themselves, you know, exploring their body, and a parent goes, well, that's not okay. Don't touch yourself there. That's rude. So what happens there? The innocence of personal bodily exploration of what are then not sexual issues, they're just natural development. But if that happens a few times, shame builds up and that will affect that child's development in that area. Another example is if one grows up in a family where there's a lot of anger expressed, either between parents or between parents and other siblings, or between parent and oneself, not necessarily physical, but verbal outbursts that the child doesn't understand, because often that happens without rationale for the child because the parent is stressed or whatever. That only has to happen a few times and the child will make the decision of, I will never get angry in my life. I don't want, and as a parent, they'll become the kind of parents who's very nice and polite because they don't want their children to grow up what the experience they had. Or I'll show you, and they'll go become rebellious. And you can get both extremes. Or another example would be don't show off. Don't be so noisy in group situations. You know, children should be quieter. Or the classic is, and I've had so many people I've worked with, both one-to-one in groups over the years, kind of say, well, I had a great childhood, and my parents were wonderful, and they wanted the best for me. Little story, five-year-old boy or girl does a drawing of some kind, and they're very proud of it, and it's those big, thick, waxy crayon-type things, and there's a sort of house and a tree. And either if the parents just says, oh, that's great, but they're so busy doing their important adult things, the child goes, well, gosh, maybe I'm not doing it right, or it's not good enough. Or the parent just says, from a sincere, apparently sincere, wanting their child to be better. Well, it's lovely what you've done, but it'd be better if the chimney was greater. Yeah. And a little puff of smoke, then it would really be good. And the child go, oh, okay, all right, so I'm not quite good enough. And that's only got to happen a few times. And you develop this pattern, which we hear a lot in people, with underneath, I don't believe I'm good enough. And we spend the rest of our lives trying to prove we're good enough. And that gets us into a lot of trouble often. So those are little examples. I don't know if they're helpful.
Yeah, very much. What happens next? For example, with this example, you know, growing up in an angry environment, and then the decision is, I will never be angry with my kids. And then a completely polite grown-up turns out, but still there's something in the shadow. On the outside, it looks great. So what's happening there in the psyche? Well, what are the downsides?
Well, the thing is that particularly our emotions are our primal human response to certain life situations. And so it's natural to be sad when we lose someone we love. Grief, sad, most natural thing. Most natural thing to be scared, frightened, when there are things I don't understand or I don't see. And, you know, anxiety is a low level of that. And it's everywhere because people don't quite understand things that are going on in our wider society. It's very anxious, and there's a lot of fear around. It's natural to feel kind of happy and joyful when things are going well. I had so many people coming again, saying, well, I want to be happier in my life. Fine. Well, that's fine. If you want to be happy, you're also going to have to, you're going to feel your emotions more deeply, because that's what that means, because so many people are more cut off, sadly, from their emotions for various reasons. That means you're also going to feel angry at times. You're going to feel scared. You're going to feel shame and guilt. Are you sure you want to feel happy? You can't have one without the other. Because there are natural human response to life situations. So it's the most natural thing to feel really angry when something's not right. You know, when somebody cuts across you in the traffic, what, stupid. What are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. You know, it's not, you know, when somebody calls you something or tells a lie about you, that's not true. I didn't say that. You know, and I'm not saying it's okay to be angry all the time or scared or sad, but our emotions are our natural response.
What happens when we suppress those?
Yeah, when we suppress it, it goes into what, in our limited way of looking at it, but it goes into a part of the psyche where it's kind of locked away. But you cannot help but feel that emotion in some way or another. And it gets channeled often into a lot of physical activity. People feel a surge and they go off and mow the lawn. They go off and bake 10 cakes when they only need one. You know, you channel that energy to do something, which is okay. It's better than hurting somebody. I mean, the example I used, and you will have heard this in our group session, is when people who are very, very nice and try hard not to be that way, and their boss says, come on, we've got to get this budget down. Can you stay late on Thursday night? Well, I've got three children at home. I'm not. Well, of course I can. I'll do it. And then it happens again, and two or three times. And the person is kind of, underneath it, there's some resentment, you know, but I can't lose my job and I don't know how to say no. I don't want to upset my job, so I'll do what he says. And then the pressure builds up so much inside, this sort of feeling. Person goes home and they explode at their family in some way. You know, and I'm not going to do it here on the screen, but, you know, what I call volcano people who suppress their emotion, particularly their anger, but it cannot help but come through at some point. And so it'll come out when they feel safest, which is at home. And that happens in all sorts of ways. People who suppress their golden gifts, their natural talents, because they weren't allowed to shine as a child, for example, they will then in certain places shine too much. They'll take center stage unconsciously, and people are going, oh, too much, you know. Our shadows take over in all sorts of situations, particularly under pressure, things come out. A critical voice will come out and cut somebody and bite and hurt.
Is there a hint that we for ourselves, like we can discover, wow, now there's some like this inner pressure, now is my maybe some kind of shadow topic that is acting out now, and I'm not really in charge of what's going on. Is there a hint how to discover that?
I think sometimes we know in our inner core integrity when I behaved in a way that was a bit out of order. I said a mean thing. I got carried away. I grandstanded somebody else's show or whatever, you know, whatever it might be. I got angry when I shouldn't have done. But sometimes one's not aware of that. And but then other people might point that out. And I think if one person points it out, okay, you know, I always say feedback is great. It's like it's a cap. You can choose to wear it or not. And if more than one person starts to say the same thing to you, then listen.
Yeah.
Then really listen and look at that, because that's a gift. In their own kind way, they're saying, that particular behavior, I don't think you're very conscious of it, and it's hurting other people, you know, small doses or big doses. I think it is quite hard to see our genuine shadows, those parts of ourselves that are hidden. Other people can see it. Our partners can see it. Children see them straight away.
Yeah.
Children can see right through our parental stuff, and unconsciously they know how to press those buttons. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about.
No, my children don't do that, and I don't have shadows.
Well, you must have very special children. Yeah, so I just want to say it's not all about unsuppressed anger, but that is quite a big theme. We get a lot of people coming to shadow work in their own way. Their sort of their primary quest is, I want to be able to stand up for myself. I want to be able to speak up. I want to be able to express myself fully at work. I want to be able to say what I really feel to my partner. All these different ways of saying, I need to be able to have more courage to speak up. Otherwise, yeah, it gets suppressed. You know?
Mm-hmm. So, John, you've met shadow work in 1992, I believe.
Correct. Yes.
And yes. What was your initial situation? Why did you even go there? What interested you?
Okay. Well, my wife and I, Nicola, were already part of a sort of intentional, quote, spiritual, aspirational community then. And it was a bit of a global network. And we were already running personal development seminars called The Art of Living. Mm. They were very good week-long seminars. And the subtext to that was The Art of Living for those who want to change the world but can't get it together to do the washing up.
That's amazing. I love this claim.
Yeah, I was always very proud of that. And it's still true.
That's, yeah.
So we were involved. And it was all very, it was very nutritional, very caring about body and health and attitudinal. So, but it was very, how can I put it? I suppose it had an element of spiritual bypassing to it, in that all these negative emotions, we won't worry about those, you know. That I don't have that perspective anymore, but I did then, and you know. And it was great. It was an era. There was a lot more of that then than there is now, I think, particularly physical communities of people. Anyway, so we became coordinators in that, and we went to our annual gathering in Colorado. And I'd already been exploring the men's work more, and I'd been running men's groups and men's retreats, and and they were great. And we used to take groups of men up into the Welsh Hills where I used to live in my earlier phase.
Mm-hmm. I just want to say it's the Man Can't Project.
No,
I'm not talking about that.
But I can speak and I will speak to that. those men's groups were just me and in this community, and the men wanted were together, and we would go do things, and we would share a lot. But there were missing components, and I didn't know that then, but there were. And then there was a breakout group at the end of our annual gathering in Colorado, and it was led by this guy Cliff Barry, and it was we went off and did this thing, a group of under 25 men or something. And yeah, I that was my first experience of a process of being introduced to that world and then doing my own process. And it's just like, wow, it just really impacted me, like you, in a similar way, similar and different way. And I just thought, wow, this is really important. This is what we need. You know, this was missing, that whole spectrum of deep emotional, psychological expression and healing was missing. We could talk about it, but this was actually experientially feeling something much more, at a much more visceral, deeper level. That changed me, you know, and I'm not saying it was like a silver bullet that changed my life. No, I'm still depressive now. We were talking about that earlier, you know, but it's changed my ability to manage these things. So because our core issues over the years, I've come. I'm going off on a tangent here. Is that okay, or do you want me to wait?
No, go on, please.
Okay, so I've come to realize that our core issues, our deepest core wounds, using that jargon terminology, they're always there. They don't go away. You know, if your parents abandon you as a child, you can't change that. It happened. If your parents were physically abusive, emotionally abusive, if you were sexually abused, you can't change those things. They happened, but you can change your response to the patterns in your body. And and the surface layers go away, and then it becomes more maintenance, and you're just more and more conscious of what's happening when those patterns grip. That for me is real deep healing. There is very, very little out there. Lots of things are promised, and I'm not going to be critical of other things that are going, but so many things are promised, but they can't deliver that because they're not touching the deeper layers. And the deeper layers down in the hard drive, that's where the pain is, that's where the roots are. So we're always looking to go there. And there's a lot of people are carrying trauma they don't even realize. And I'm not, trauma is extreme. There's lots of extreme trauma. There are also lots of subtle layers of trauma, like the child being told, well, if you just did your pictures slightly differently, it would be better. That's not traumatic, but it's in the classic sense of the word, but it has produced an impact that affects that child's growth and develop into adulthood. And they'll try to be perfect, try to get everything right, try to please everybody, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. So trauma is also a word, like a buzzword today.
Yes, yeah.
And shadow work is also very deeply or profound in its work with traumatic experiences or what's stuffed in the body from experiences. So how would you describe how shadow work works with trauma?
I would say overall works with trauma very well. As you said, I mean, it's become another buzzword, trauma. And in our early years, we weren't thinking that way. We used the term, but trauma was about extreme events, extreme physical violence, extreme abandonment, neglect, sexual violence, etc. And now trauma is used in a broader spectrum way, and I believe appropriately. So one can go and study trauma and trauma therapies separately, and I think that's great. Our skill set is we teach people to manage trauma when it shows up, and sometimes we will recommend to somebody afterwards privately to say, it might be, you know, you've discovered some things about yourself. For example, there are many times we've had people in processes begin, and this would be with people who've come two or three or four times, And where initially their process is a certain way, and it looks, and there's something going on, and we as facilitators, because there's something there not quite being shown or just not, and then the next layer comes up next time they come, and it's more overt, and then the third time it's like, gosh, I actually think I was sexually abused. You know, I actually think, and I've had that experience with several people where they realized that this happened to them. Now, of course, lots of people come knowing that they were abused in some, and they want to work that issue. And shadow work is really good at that. We're very good at providing an arena where they can have a victory where they did not have a victory energetically in themselves, because the power differential was so extreme. Little child abused, neglected, hurt by big adult person. Now they're an adult. And with role play, they can access and say the things and do the things that were never could be done then to change that whole pattern. If somebody realizes that they've some things were done to them, or they realize, and it's not just sexual abuse, it's other forms as well, bullying, neglect. We may suggest to them that they go find a specialist trauma therapist to work some of those issues. And we say, because we're not qualified as specialist trauma therapists or sex therapists. That's not our overall training is very effective at managing a lot of those things. Sometimes it worries me that the word has become a buzzword. I suppose, what does trauma mean? It means that one's normal way of operating is jarred by an extreme experience.
Yeah.
It's one thing it being jarred by almost having a crash in a car, and then the trauma of actually being in a train crash and being an only survivor. You know, there's they're very different things. And you could say that is a trauma they're carrying for the rest of their life. Just avoiding a car crash, you can get over that. You'll let go of that. You know, so does it sit there as a trauma in one's life? Probably not for too long.
Yeah, because other forms of therapy or mainly look forward, or not forward, but to the future, or outcome-based, and what are my resources, how can I like go in a good direction, but they don't look at the source of the problem. Why do you think it's important to integrate the source?
There's a number of ways we could look at this. If something is growing, right, and it gets damaged in some way. And then as it grows, it gets bigger, and that damage becomes larger and more boom. Then you look at it 25, 30, 40 years down the line, and there's this damage that keeps showing. I'm using that term carefully. It could mean many things. And you start to look at it and go, well, you poke around at that. Okay, and you change, you cut off a bit and you change a bit. But if you don't get back to the root, it's just going to keep happening again. And I think that's what a lot of people have experienced, that, you know, yes, I've done a lot of therapy. I did this. I did that. I'm not going to name different things. You know, I did this cognitive thing here and took some drugs here or whatever and discovered this. But if you don't get back to the root issue, it's going to keep appearing.
Yeah. And you work around it somehow.
Yeah, if you work around it, you find the strategies. We've already developed strategies to cope with it. And those are a lot of our shadowy behaviors, our strategies. So there's the wound, the initial wound where, oh, this got jarred out of shape, metaphorically. That's the wound. And then we develop strategies which become the shadows that people see that I don't see about myself as ways of coping with this thing that is hurting deep inside somewhere, to almost to the extent that I don't even remember what it's all about.
Yeah. Wow.
But it's there. And so what we're always looking is, if possible, to what we call regress the pattern back to, when did you first experience anything that looked like this? And you've seen this when we're looking at the role play scenario. And I've had people go, oh my God, that's my uncle. I had no idea the influence he had. That's my grandmother. of course, parents, you know, mum and dad. I mean, I do joke a lot and say, well, look, let's cut all the stuff here. Let's just get mum and dad on the carpet and let's just see what was going on.
Yeah. You know,
we can spend half an hour doing all the fluff, but when it boils down to it, what was really going on? And it's those formative things are huge. Now, and lots of people in adult life say, oh, it doesn't matter. You know, okay, all right. Well, if your life's working, fine, great. And I know lots of people quite close to me say, well, I don't look back. I'm only looking forward. The past doesn't matter. And I'm going, well, all right, if that really works for you, that's fine. Mm-hmm. Okay. But I know for me and a lot of people I know, it doesn't work so well. But I want to say also, just to add, it doesn't mean in shadow where we then spend the rest of ourselves looking over our shoulder at what happened, regretting it. No, it's about changing that pattern down there and recognizing that it got hurt and healing, giving that what it didn't get then when it needed it deep in our body so that it can begin to reshape. And then your pattern, your life changes a bit. You don't start responding automatically the same way. So one's still looking forward then.
Yeah, I think that's an important bit too, that you added that.
Yeah, otherwise it can sound rather gloomy and so, you know, but it's not. It's very optimistic.
No, not at all. Yeah. So coming back to the story, because you've done really amazing work for shadow work in Europe. As I've said, you've been a pioneer and you founded the Shadow Work Association.
How can I say it? I just want to say it's not just me. It's me and my wife, Nicola. I was the one who first fully experienced, but Nicola and I have been in this and our partnership all the way through, you know, apart from the first couple of years. And without her, it wouldn't be where it is. So I just want to stress that. It's not just me. To explain, so we started doing groups in UK, in England, and we went where we were invited. We were invited to do something in Germany, and that developed. We used to go to Germany twice a year for years after that. And then that stopped. We were invited to go to Russia, and you know, we've trained people. There's a whole community of people in Russia now. Sadly, the political climate means we're not in contact face to face. And they're getting, but over what, nearly 20 years there of going back and forth, we did groups, we trained people to train people, and now they're training and mentoring, and you know, the communities, they're doing their own thing. And we're only in the last 7 or 8 years been passing that on. Because we're having to step back. I mean, I'm not done, but we are doing much, much less now. So, I mean, the group we did with you is a rare, we're not doing groups all the time. Whereas we were doing groups like that, you know, 5, 6, 7 times a year, which is a lot of that kind of thing. So it was an organic development. And so the term Shadow Work Association has only appeared in the last couple of years, actually. We used to be called the Shadow Work Certified Guild. We used to call it the Certified Facilitators Gathering. We've had various names. So we would have an annual gathering. And they were initially in the US. Nick and I would go every year. And we were representing, and our work was developing. And then we had a hub here, and then we created a hub in Russia as well. So there are now 3 annual gathering hubs where people go to requalify, maintain their certification, and to have fun together and explore. So that's, once you become qualified as a practitioner, it's not done deal forever, because of the nature of the work and how easy it would be for it to become manipulative. You know, one's own inflated superego shadows could take over as the great healer, the great facilitator, and there's a level of humility that we have to be seen to do our own work and facilitate our peers every 2 years. So, and that's a challenge, and quite a few people push against that. But I'm proud we've maintained that level of quality. It's important.
Yeah. And what was it like to doing this building up work? I mean, you said it grew naturally, it grew organically.
Not easily at the beginning. Yeah. I mean, it really wasn't easy at the beginning. We were lucky. We had a wide range of people. But once you've exhausted the range of people, then the real work begins in terms of promoting it, getting what I call getting bums on seats. You know, I've been doing that for decades and I've had enough now. Others can do it. But that's the thing. Like doing the groups was the cream. Making it happen is another thing. And when people don't know what you're talking about, there was the hard work phase. Then there was a real sort of flourishing growth phase. And we were starting to train people, and we were going to Russia and Germany, and then led some work in Turkey, and the French speaking was developing, etc. And there was a sort of flourishing. But what's happened now is because the term shadow work has become so generic, and that's quite a lot to do with what we did over in all those early years. Not exclusively, but a large part of it is what we did. It's now harder to fill the things that we're doing.
Yeah, to fill the workshops.
Because there's so much out there, and that's a challenge. And I feel quite sad about that, to be honest, as I'm and Nicola are stepping back. Yes, it's flourishing, and I'm proud, very proud of all of the people and, you know, with all the challenges of organizational development, and we're doing our best with that. But the climate is different now to what it was 10, 15 years ago or 20 years ago, when there was a sense of the thing flourishing because we were on the leading edge. Now other people are using that term. They're not doing what we're doing. And, it's very different.
How could people find original shadow work workshops in this German-speaking area?
Well, they go to shadowwork.eu and look at whatever groups there are and the German facilitators. I'm not sure there's a huge amount going on. I know that there are some groups. unfortunately, Germany has been difficult for it to develop more. I don't quite know why. I think there's been such a wide range of personal development work that is out there in Germany. But yes, I mean, Marie-Françoise Rosart has been there almost from the beginning. Anything she's doing, I would highly recommend, and others, and John and Alice Morel.
Were there any shadows you had to work with growing this thing also in your leadership role you had?
Of course.
You want to share?
If I must. I think, yes, one of the greatest pleasures I have in all of this, in people who come and train in shadow work, is seeing how people grow and become more themselves. Like, really, you can, over a period, there are lots of people who've come to a shadow work group and it's a great experience and we never see them again because it was enough. And then there are some who come for one or two, three sessions, and that's a phase in their life and it's enough. And then there is a come who want to train, and then that's then a deep immersion, and they're having to look at themselves, as I had to look at myself a lot. And therefore, there's a maturing, there's a growing, there's a develop, there's more of an acceptance, knowing I've got these quirky, not so great behaviors and it's okay, and I can put my arms around them and include and embrace, and therefore become a more, what I would call a more balanced human. So I had that experience myself. I remember going through the early trainings, as we were exploring the inflations and deflations, that's me, and that's me, oh my God, and that's me. It's like, oh, I can be like that. You know, I mean, it's just, there's an appropriate pain in seeing the truth of some of our behaviors as it impacts others. So I had to overcome being over controlling, wanting to micromanage everything. I'm still keeping an eye on that one, and letting go is the hardest thing in that way, you know. but also overshining, like you, as you facilitate, you work with a partner, And the partnership is important. And it's very easy for someone, I would say, very high inflated sovereign to think they can do it all themselves. And I had plenty of that. I mean, leadership is full of potential shadows, you know, to becoming overly dictatorial, overly controlling, have to do it my way. And my way is the only way, which, you know, in the early days, one tends to think these things. And it's just not true. But so learning to, I think I've learned to become much, much more flexible than I used to be, much less controlling. I think more accepting my own imperfections. I mean, I think that's the greatest gift in all of this, is so many people come and say, well, I want to let go of this. I don't want to be like that anymore.
Please fix that.
I don't want that, yeah. You know. And my view is, well, that's great. Good luck. It'll keep coming back and smacking you in the face or someone else. The thing is to accept that is a part of you and put your arms around it. And this terrible phrase we use, but find the gold in the wound. You know, find what, because reclaim the parts of the color spectrum or the notes of the octave that you're not using. And somehow you've gone, I don't want to use that, but actually it's part of me. So learning to put one's arms around the ugly, critical, the constantly getting angry, the constant impatience, whatever it is, and go, I see what that is. And as I burrow down, I see what's really of value there is that I really care, that I want things to go well. Okay, then, which is very different to a lot of people who want, I don't want that anymore.
Yeah. So the work you do, I experience it's so profound and so skilled. And also, as you just mentioned, doing it with your partner, I was able to observe you and Nicola, you know, holding the processes together and how you hand it over only with looking at each other's eyes and understanding. And yeah, so I really wish for this amazing work you do that it might flourish and grow and more people get to find it. And
thank you. Well, I hope so too. That's been my only desire. It wasn't to build an organization or anything like that. It was that the work, that more and more people experience what I experienced. That's all I've ever wanted. But it involves organizations and all the things that come with that, and training things, and so there are complications. But thank you, thank you. Yeah.
Is there anything you would like to share or say as closing words that I didn't ask so far?
Not, to be honest, not really. No, it's been a privilege to talk with you. I know there's some of those topics I could have said more, and I don't even remember what they are now. So, I mean, it's just been great to talk about it. I hope this has some value beyond us. If anyone is genuinely interested as a result of this, then go and experience a shadow work group session somewhere and find out for yourself. And yes, you're going to be anxious beforehand, and it's well worth it.
Absolutely. So thank you, John, for the time, for sharing your experience and being with me today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you. Thank you, Ursula. Yeah.
Danke, dass du bis zum Schluss dran geblieben bist. Wenn dich das Thema Urnatur interessiert und wie sie deine Art zu arbeiten prägt, dann hol dir den Selbsttest und E-Book zum Vertiefen. Er zeigt dir, welche Doshas dich prägen und wo dein aktueller Zustand gerade von deiner Urnatur abweicht, also wo du gegen deine Natur arbeitest. Dabei ist auch das E-Book Die Doshas im Business verstehen und das hilft dir, das Ganze zu vertiefen. Hol dir den Test samt E-Book kostenfrei auf feuerherd.at/selbsttest. Bis zur nächsten Folge. Ich freue mich, wenn du wieder dabei bist.